Good morning. Welcome to this Friday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. For this, the 15th day of January 2021, half of January gone already. My producer today is Dennis Johnson, and I am David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock today. Well, I suppose the most topical issue on the national agenda continues to be the COVID-19 situation. And what I'm going to do at the start of today's program is that I want to flash back to what I thought was one of the more significant aspects of what we heard from last evening's news conference. And then I'm going to get a reaction from someone to what was said by Prime Minister Mia Amor-Motley. So let's go back to what she had to say last night on this whole question of the backlog.
Well, with respect to the backlog, we are in a position between January 7th and 11th, where we still have just over about 3,000 tests to be completed with respect to the backlog. The best advice being given to us from the head of the lab, and I accept it, having seen and been working with them every day for the last few days, is that we should be able to clear the majority of the backlog, for which we have genuine information, between now and the end of the weekend. Beyond that, there were some samples for which there were difficulties, as I think I adverted to last Friday, that there just simply was not information, either because it was illegible, it was smudged, or the difficulties with the transmission of data because of what was happening with the SHAPE app and connectivity and DNS issues. For those persons, many of them were asked over the course of the last few days to be retested, and in many instances, many of them have already received their new results and have been released in most instances with a handful, I think, believe it being positive. With respect to that backlog, and let me give you, for example, from the 7th of January onwards, and I'm treating to the 7th to the 10th, because we're going to apply the new policy that Dr. Bess and the others adverted to for anything before the 7th of January. The 7th of January, we would have received 2,154 tests. And this is to give you an example. Right now, we're taking 900 and 1,000 tests this week. Before this whole thing, we were taking 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. So that we were last week taking 2,000, 2,500 a day. On the 7th of January, we received 2,154 tests, and we have already completed 1,717 results for that day. For the 8th of January, we received 2,786 tests, and we have already completed 1,278 in that backlog. On the 9th of January, we received 1,384 tests, and we've completed only 414, and on the 10th of January, 1,165 tests were received, and we have completed 213. If you can see by the numbers of tests, you will begin to understand, therefore, that what this country faced last week was a veritable explosion between the 31st of December and the 10th of January, not even the 10th so much, more the 9th of January. A veritable explosion in the numbers of tests that even with the best will in the world would have placed strain on any system. It was an operational failure, because not because we don't have a number of machines, but because we did not have the capacity to deal with that large numbers of tests within the short period of time, especially over the holiday period. Fortunately, we have been able, as I said last Friday, to increase the numbers of persons both working in the lab as well as communicating the results. We have been able to expand the call center significantly. We've also been able to have different departments coming together to help us be able to identify the categories 1, 2, 3, and 4, especially in the backlog, given the fact that the new system was only implemented going forward from the 11th of January, because when we announced it on the night of the 8th, as you would appreciate, it would have been difficult for the polyclinics to implement it before the Monday morning, since they are the primary locations for the tests. I am satisfied, my friends, that we are on our way towards getting there. We are not quite there yet.
Prime Minister Mia Amor-Motley speaking last evening. Now, let's accept that we are all in this together, as she says, and that we are all learning together about COVID. In that context, therefore, this morning we spoke with virologist Dr. Brendan Larder for his take on what we heard from the Prime Minister.
Well, I thought it was interesting that the Prime Minister gave some specific figures, which was gratifying, on the actual backlog of samples at the Best of Santos laboratory. And I think she indicated that between January the 7th and the 10th, there are actual swab samples sitting in the lab, presumably in the refrigerators, that hadn't been tested. So this was new information, and the first time that we've heard that actual samples are sitting in the labs that haven't been tested. I think that these numbers were in the thousands. And my question would really be, is there a real value now going back to some of these older samples over a week old? What would be the viability of those samples to test? And if the retesting of certain individuals is very important, should they be re-swabbed, brought back in and re-swabbed? The other issue, I guess, is it, given that there is this backlog and reporting of test results seems to be contemporary results as well as a mixture of older results, it's really very hard to get an idea, a clear idea of the current outbreak as it stands. So it's very difficult to get a clear picture from my perspective of what is really happening in terms of infection rates and spread of COVID-19 on the island.
In such circumstances, what would be your advice?
Well, my advice has been the same advice all along, and I think that they obviously have ramped up testing in the lab, which they clearly realised they had to do, which is good. My advice is that if the government and the Ministry of Health are solely relying on the policy of contact tracing and testing to contain the outbreak, the testing of the contacts, in my view, really has to be contemporary testing. So the testing and turnaround time has to be very quick. Because if it isn't, if you're testing a contact and not getting a result back for over a week, well, firstly, you rely on that person to self-quarantine and not go out and about when they may be infected. And secondly, you really don't have then the full picture of whether those contacts are positive or whether they have contacted other people, and then you're a week or more behind in trying to trace other infections. So if that's the mainstay of your strategy in terms of containing the outbreak, but there are obvious issues with turnaround time of the in the lab with the test results, then my feeling is that there should be or could be add-ons to that, to the strategy of containment.
Dr. Larder makes this further observation about the statistics that we were presented with last evening.
Well, I would say difficult to interpret, and that's the feeling I get. They're very difficult to interpret because we don't know from the figures. For example, yesterday we heard a breakdown between the number of persons who were infected, new infections that were discovered in the prison versus outside the prison. But we don't know, for example, the people who were tested positive outside the prison, when those tests were taken, what date, were they the day before, were they a week before? And without having that information and seeing that information, it's very hard to know what those particular daily figures really mean.
So that's virologist Dr. Brendan Larder reacting to some of the comments which we got last evening from Prime Minister Motley. I think that in all that we are experiencing right now, there is a need for us to do as much educating of people as we can. And that is part of our quest. There are some people within our community who behave as though they don't want anybody to question anything that is said by the administration as it relates to COVID. And I think that is a very backward position to hold. This disease is changing quite a lot. Right now, there is a lot of focus on the Brazilian variant. And I mean, there are so many unanswered questions, and all we can do is try to get as best an understanding of it as possible. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, morning.
Morning, Mr. Ellis. A couple of things here to continue with what you just left off. I saw some time ago, that the scientists, this is from a reputable website, not one of those ones that anybody could put up. They are now saying that you could recover from this virus, but yet in 4 or 5 months, you could still transmit that, you know, without even knowing that you have symptoms of it. And I am beginning to wonder, every day they find out, so I knew and knew about this virus. Just the other day, Portugal, they again locked down the old place because of this new variant. But my thing to you is, when I listen to the doctors, Dr. Corey Ford and Dr. Antonio Best, they always tell you about you must follow the science. There's nothing wrong with that. But I want to remind Dr. Corey Ford that there might be a big lawsuit case coming in the United States now with a woman who was healthy and she took that vaccine and she died. So that might be, that's what I'm really looking forward to, that woman's relatives bring some lawsuit against that company. The other thing I would like to ask you, what is the purpose of Elizabeth Dawson, Ambassador Elizabeth Dawson?
Nothing that has been outlined. That has been outlined by the government. The government has said why she is here.
I didn't hear the reason they give you, though. Oh, they'll give it. Because when I sit down and listen to her, if we want to, it was on Monday evening, Tuesday, and today's Thursday. What she's doing, any person, you have people in Barbados can do that. You have the lady that who moderates this program, Dr. Christina, she could get that position or somebody else. I don't see the importance of bringing Dr. Elizabeth, Ambassador Thompson to Barbados, really. I don't see what the significance of that. You mean that we just like paid out money and paid out money and paid out money and bringing experts here, left, right, and center, or you tell me that?
It's for the government to answer that question. I'm in no position to answer it for you. I just want to let you know that one of the things that we have reported is that a Manhattan congressman became the fourth member of Congress to test positive for the coronavirus this week. And this is days after that mob had laid siege to the U.S. Capitol and forced members into hiding. Now, what is significant about his case is that he received the second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine last week. All right. Notwithstanding the fact that he has had the vaccine, he has now tested positive. What I also find interesting about this situation among the congressmen is that it looks as though only the Democrats getting sick. Of course, they're blaming the Republicans, a core of them who refused to wear masks while they were all huddled together. But one can only assume that these Republicans are asymptomatic and have not tested, because COVID is no respecter of political persuasion. This is down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I am very concerned about, you know, when this corona first came up, they said they were holding people for the second test, when they get the second test.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, so I'm surprised to hear now that people, I don't know if I hear right, that people are coming up without getting the second test. I don't know if I heard right.
I think that if that were to happen, I think a lot has to do with the timeline. Because remember, COVID is supposed to be incubating for 14 days or so. So it's quite possible that what you're seeing is that they're paying attention to how long people would have been in quarantine. And say, well, if you've been in quarantine for more than 14 days, then you may not require the second test, but they would have to explain that. That is my assumption.
Yes, because I don't feel comfortable with that.
You should be grossly uncomfortable with what obtains right now. I mean, given the number of people who have taken tests and have not been able to get back results.
Yeah.
Given the backlog that the government has spoken about, there are many people out there who are doing things that are potentially dangerous. To give you an example, we had a video going around with a man who was in hospital, and he was talking about his situation and the fact that he was there waiting for these for the test results. But he also referred to some possible sinus issue that he was facing. And clearly, people who listen to that say, but you know, in those circumstances, you have to be suspicious as to whether he might have had COVID. And that's why he was waiting for the test in the first place, because he too would have been suspicious. But some member, his wife, then went to one of the outlets, even though she herself might have been exposed. And she didn't do that deliberately. I mean, she was operating on a different premise. But this is the danger that we are exposed to, because many people will unwittingly go there and do things when they themselves may be asymptomatic. So that is what should be the worrying thing for us, that we need to just be cautious, err on the side of caution. Don't let people tell you foolishness about, or you're blowing this out of proportion and you're alarmist and all of that. Based on what we are seeing here, it is better to exercise caution than to throw caution to the wind. So you're focusing on this issue of second testing, but I would suggest to you that right now in this climate, you know, you've got to be careful overall.
Another thing, as you were saying too, you know, the old people used to say people biting off more than they can chew. I feel government is biting off more than they can chew, because if we had not let so many people come in, we know that we have a crisis here. So why are we adding more people by bringing in more people from outside, only to put negative things on our country? I mean, this is about time. I mean, people were saying all the time that airport should be closed but for at least 2 weeks. Don't let any more people come in here to complicate the situation.
I think the administration needs to answer that question. If they're saying on the one hand that there's been this significant reduction of people coming into Barbados, then they have to say, what do we stand to lose if we close down the airport for a while? Because the other question is the extent to which we are also adding to the pressure on the testing facilities that we have. You know, this idea that you don't want to lock down because of the impact on business is, we understand that, but there are those who look at it and say, does it really make sense for us to continue to behave this way in an environment where these variants are out there that we do not understand? We just don't. Other countries bigger than us, more resources than we have decided, you know what, let's put a stop to this until we can get a better appreciation. Yeah. So you've got the British variant, you got the South African variant, now you got the Brazilian variant. So, you know, they will have to answer questions of this nature.
And we are not getting anything from tourism because that money that you're spending is supporting there on Harrison Point. And I mean, the same money that they'll be bringing and spending, which is not very much at this time, is going to spend back on the same very tour. So I don't see the sense.
Okay. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello? Good morning. Yeah. I have a very quick question to ask. What is fake news?
You can answer that question.
No, I will let you answer them too. I think that fake news is something that is not true. Now, I have always said that, let's say in the case of a police officer investigating something, you should never ignore any kind of news. And you see me? For what I heard Prime Minister on television last night about fake news, I am going to listen to all kinds of news, me, especially so-called fake news. Because what I'm going to say is going to turn to what I'm saying now. During the last election that brought into office, I heard things being criticized that the last administration was doing that they have promised to correct. Instead of correcting, they added to it. The amount of consultants, the ministers, the 17 ministers were seen to be too much. Yes, and I agree with that. We don't need the 17 ministers. But all of a sudden, Barbadians are contented with almost 30. You see? Now, as far as I'm concerned, when you tell me something, and then you do something counter to what you told me, that is fake news. That is fake news. That way, see me?
Well, that's a new definition of fake news, as far as I'm aware of. I've heard it called being inconsistent and things like that, but I never knew that was fake news.
But as you tell me something, you tell me that you are not going to...
You could say that you were misled, but that has not been defined as...
Well, said that too. Talking about being misled, I want to know if, let's call it Nona, who the word is used? It was there that's not begin with a D, or deception. If deception is against the laws of Barbados, because...
Not in that context, but seriously, not in that context. If you talk about political deception, You can't take the body to court for that.
It's not. So you see, no. Politicians create laws.
Because if that was the case, I got a couple of people who call the call-in program from time to time that would have got a court ever since.
Me included?
Well, I'm not going to point an accusing finger at anyone in particular, but whoever the cat fits, let them wear it. And some of them have brought a lot of fake news to me too on the call-in program. Genuine fake news. It's still there. Are you gone?